This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is one of the greatest poker tournament players of all time, a 2007 inductee of the World Series of Poker's Hall of Fame, and the player who's won a record 17 World Series of Poker bracelets. Maybe he is the greatest poker player of all time. Bill Hellmuth joins us on Sports Jam. Bill, great to have you on the show.
I think I've earned the title of greatest poker tournament player of all time. A lot of people would agree with that. But then, you know, there's a lot of people in my profession that, like, it feels like are trying to take something away from me, you know, like, oh yeah, he's the greatest, but he's not so good now. But then they look at the last 3 years I've had at the World Series of Poker, and there's only one or two of us that have separated themselves, and I happen to be one of them. So it's nice. I don't know. I probably sound like a cocky asshole to you folks out there. I apologize. But I have earned greatest of all time in poker tournaments. And then when it comes to the last 3 years, I think I'm still at the top, but I probably just sound cocky. God dang it. Brag, brag, brag.
Turn card. It's the three of clubs. Oh, it's a straight flush for Hellmuth. And it's his first PGT title.
Wow.
Good hand, man. Good game.
Good battle.
Yeah.
You played great, by the way, for 2 days. So.
You too, bud. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Osmus out in second. And that revenge earned by Phil Hellmuth.
How fitting. Takes home his first title inside the studio with a straight flush.
Woo! That is quite a way to cap off Phil Hellmuth's first U.S. Poker Open title.
It's your attitude. It's your whole vibe that people have attracted themselves to you through the years. You're not just a great player, but you're a character, right? You're somebody that they can relate to. You wear your feelings on your sleeves. And the 2024 World Series of Poker Tournament of Champions is coming up at the legendary Commerce Casino in Los Angeles starting May 22nd. Obviously, you got to be thrilled about that event.
That's going to be a fun one. Yeah. And, you know, it's the first time I think that there's ever been a World Series of Poker bracelet handed out in Los Angeles. You know, I've been in business mode a lot lately, and I've advised 26 different companies. So I'm actively advising 7. What does that mean? Generally speaking, I provide introductions to, you know, 30 people for each company I'm involved in. And then I help them about 1 hour a month. So I sign a contract that says, hey, I'll help you 10 hours a year. And so that's been fun. A lot of business stuff going on. But, you know, during the World Series of Poker, it's written into all my contracts that I cannot be bothered. And I'm very clear about that. So that's when I get to just think about poker every day. I'll be calling other great players, talking about hands, talking about the tournament the next day. And so from May 28th until July 17th, it will all be about poker. And then it's a matter of, okay, how do I pace myself? Unlike some of the young great players who literally will play 2 or 3 tournaments every day, I'll play 30 instead of 70 or 80 or 100, and I'll take 13 days off. I need the rest. So, you know, my gift is that I've learned to play all of these 10 games that we play at a world-class level. It's really incredible. A couple of the games I just finally mastered in 2021. And so that's really a gift. And then, of course, you know, we have our gifts and we have our, you know, not so gift. My not so gift is that I get tired a lot more easily. I've blown a lot of tournaments in my lifetime due to fatigue. And so I really have to kind of, you know, guard myself against, you know, blowing tournaments and too much fatigue.
Let's talk about fatigue for you, because the average person may not get it, because they may not understand the mental strain of the game. They may not understand the length of the tournament, how it can go into the wee hours. Talk about the strain and fatigue when it comes to playing poker.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Deeb, who's one of the other, you know, top three players based on the last 3 years, who's right up there with me, literally wakes up every day at 10 a.m. and plays till 2 a.m. every day at the World Series of Poker. And so that involves tournaments sometimes start at noon, sometimes start at 2, sometimes day 2 starts at 4, and he'll often be running around to three different tournaments at once, playing all three. It's impressive what he does. He has that kind of stamina. Me, I try to get up, like, if there's a $10,000 buy-in, I'll try to enter on day two at 2 p.m. So I skip the entire first day. And then because of that, the blinds are very high and you're going to be very swingy. I could be eliminated quickly, but if I catch some, you know, that's where there's some luck dependent at the beginning. And so I'm doing everything I can to take days off to rest. If I make a final table, generally speaking, I'll not only take the next day off, but maybe even the day after that off because I'm so tired. He makes a final table, busts at midnight, hops in another tournament. So that level of what he's able to do for 7 weeks straight is incredible. And then then we had some debates about, is that being a great poker player? And most of the top players said no. So what they were trying to do is that every time you cash, you're getting all these points. And I'm like, a cash? What is that? You make the top 13. Who cares if you make the top 15% of 15 tournaments? And then every three or four of those caches might add up to, like, you know, every five caches might add up to a victory. I'm like, what? You min cash for 3K, 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 lost money on five min caches and you get the credit of a final table. So sorry to kind of devolve into that debate about player of the year points. But, you know, someone like me has to win player of the year by, you know, and I did. I set a record in 2021. I made seven final tables, never been done before at the World Series, in seven different games. No one had ever even heard of that, and still didn't win player of the year. So, you know, so we're working on that system. But, you know, folks, there's a lot of fatigue involved at the World Series. And if you're a normal person, I think I might be a little bit on the below normal side when it comes to, you know, the amount of rest I need.
Anything else? And it showers in the bid for 17. Here comes the river.
Oh. It's a 10!
Yes! Wow. Yes!
Baby.
Yes!
Philip,
yes!
Baby. Oh my
yes.
God!
Yes! Yes! Let the best hand hold up, boys.
When you see today's world, you go in the casino and the tables are packed. And I think one of the reasons for that is someone like Phil Hellmuth. Because, Phil, you have made this game so fun and entertaining. Whether, you know, you've called yourself the John McEnroe of poker, being able to berate an opponent. But it's so entertaining and it's so inviting that when you see these tables filled today, it has to make you feel like I'm one of the reasons why this is all come to play.
Well, you know, if you take that on too much, then you get too cocky. And as much as I sound pretty cocky in this interview, I'm a lot, like my wife will tell you, I'm a lot less cocky than I come across as, because now I'm kind of fronting for greatest of all time, fronting for things that I've earned. But it's interesting because Daniel Negreanu, who's one of the other main figures in the poker game, and a lot of people think that he and I have the biggest recognizability in the world for poker players. And so Daniel, some players were attacking us in December, attacking one of my entrances. I came in as Neptune, god of the sea. It was great. I came out of the ocean in my costume. You know, and I think these things are great for poker. It brings a global spotlight to the game. People are like, what's Phil's entrance? And some of the younger kids were attacking it. And Daniel's like, man, you guys are like rabid dogs. You just want to bite the hand that feeds you. And so Daniel came out and said, hey, I love his nickname, Real Kid Poker, came out and said, hey, you know, Phil and I and a couple of others, you know, are responsible for the growth of poker. And whether you think it's 10% or Daniel thought it was 40 or 50%, I'm more in the 10%. But whatever the number is, yeah, we've helped a lot. And that feels good. And I'm constantly promoting the game. That's what people don't understand, is that I'm always, when negative stories come out in poker, they go global right away. The positive stories don't. So when I see people winning tournaments that are just really good people, and you have to understand the poker world just has so many great people in it, so many interesting people, you know, all walks of life. just a lot of laughter at the table. You know, you play these tournaments, the World Series, and people are having a good time, you know? And so, you know, I think it's important. So I will tweet out, hey, another really nice person won a tournament. I've been working on since November. I've been trying to work on how to get more female players into the game and trying to make sure that whenever I film, I want 50% female players. It hasn't worked out to always 50%, but that's what I'm currently working on. And I'm about to sign a deal with a huge poker site. And my first, what I want to do is I want to have 8 men versus 8 women, have the site put up $100,000, have everybody buy in $2,000 to $5,000. I don't want to limit the people that can play and have that. And then have people see, hey, you know, we'll start with 4 men at one table, 4 women at one table, and then the other table for television, and just kind of, you know, because I think what happens, you know, with women is, and it pisses me off, is they come and they finally are like, yes, I want to play poker. I can see it's this game. And they finally decide to come and play in a casino. And then some, you know, $100 buy-in, and some drunk asshole makes some comment to them and they're like, I don't need this. And they walk away. So that's bad. And then, so they get kind of cut off before they can start. Now, Jenny Just and Power Poker. Jenny is this maybe the best female entrepreneur of all time. I'm friends with Sheryl Sandberg too, who I think is, you know, right up there with her, the two of them. And there's a bunch of other fantastic, but those are two of the most, you know, no one knows Jenny's name. Everybody knows Sheryl's name. Sheryl was CEO of Facebook and Google. But Jenny started this thing called Power Poker. And now, you know, she'd never been played before. And she said, you know what? I don't think women are taking enough risk. So she and her daughter went and played poker for the first time. And the first time it was a bunch of 16-year-old, her daughter's friends played, and but the second time they already got it. And so she's like, man, a light bulb went off. So she started Power Poker. And I think now they've trained 100,000 women in the United States of America, mostly business women. And so I think the numbers are just going to continue to just grow from women entering poker tournaments. Right now, we only have 3 or 4%. It's ridiculous. But I wouldn't be surprised if we end up with 30 or 40% in the next 10 years. Anyway, I do believe in promoting poker, promoting the game. And, you know, a lot of the things that I do are around promotion of poker.
You talked about your entrances, and you have spent lots of money through the years on costumes and Caesar and things like that really have been fun.
Bill has entered the Rio Poker Room, and the fans cannot believe what they are seeing.
You know, he does look a little like Kirk Douglas in Spartacus.
Can you imagine Puggy Pearson doing something like this? Oh, my goodness. Phil's fellow pro, Tony Cusino, getting some blackmail material.
Actually, doesn't Spartacus bleed to death at the end of that film?
And I think that there is this persona, you know, obviously about Phil Hellmuth. And then there's, as you talk about, the husband who's in his Palo Alto, California home with his wife. And they are different, but you've been able to make both work. How have you done that?
You know, my wife, a lot of people tease me because I talk about how I've never cheated on my wife. And I get teased for that. Oh, Phil, you don't have to tell people that. You don't have to tell people that. And I've been saying that out loud since 2003 to everybody that'll listen. And people are like, ah, Phil, just shut up. We know you haven't cheated on your wife. And then, you know, and so, but that's something, you know, and as time passes, all of a sudden it's more of a important milestone, an important thing, people following me. And so I'm a family man. And my wife, who I've been with now for 35 years, is here in the house with me somewhere. And she's a doctor at a major university. We're not gonna say the name of the university. She hates that. But I'm just very lucky. And our kids are 33 and 30. And one lives a mile north, one lives a mile south. Fantastic. We're very lucky. And so I'm a family guy. And that's important to me, keeping the family unit. And yeah, I've been able to accomplish everything I've been able to accomplish. One of our rules is, hey, honey, you know, you have to come to the Worlds. You have to be there for me at the World Series of Poker. Well, that was an easy contract for her to sign when it was 12 days long. Now it's 2 months. She has to take a lot of time off. She flies literally in out of Vegas 8 times, you know. You know, she likes Southwest Airlines because, you know, now she has all the VIP programs there, you know, even if I occasionally say, honey, would you like to take a private flight? Oh, no, no. Yeah. But she is, yeah. And so, yeah. And that bond, you know, is just, you know, having her at my side and all that we've had to, like, you know, she was ready to leave me in 2003. Because she married someone, I think, how did she put it? She was very accurate. She said, I married a diamond in the rough. You're still a diamond in the rough. So maybe that's 102. And so we went into therapy. We spent 3 hours a week in intense therapy. And I was devastated knowing that she was potentially going to leave me. In 2015, same thing. I was like, all right, hon, maybe now I'm, you know, you need to grow in 3 places. And we went into therapy. It was pretty intense, but we never cheated on each other, which was really smart. And right around, I mean, I think that's what happens. That's, I don't judge people when relationships go sour. I would never judge somebody for cheating, but because she didn't on me in 02, I'm like, I was in this situation where it would have been very easy. And I'm like, no, just be strong, Phil. Yeah, I have great discipline. And so, and you know, and then when you become famous, all these actresses and models are suddenly available to you. My friends are like, why didn't you? I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't want to have to lie to my wife ever about anything ever. So I get to leave my, I get to walk straight forward in life and never lie. Anybody that's kind of like has been an asshole to me or been really bad to me, I've forgiven them all. So I feel like I can walk down the hallway of life and never have to turn left or right. I could give everybody a high five. Some of them would be a little harder, but I'd definitely still give them a high five. And so maintaining no hatred has been an important principle for me. And, you know, and part of that is being loyal to my wife. And then life's a lot easier. You know, she's completely supportive of me. I'm completely supportive of her. I used to keep having this realization that she won't pick up my phone calls in the middle of the day. And I would get mad and I'm like, oh yeah, she's a freaking doctor.
When did the bug, when did it catch you, poker? And do you remember like the first time you said, yeah, I like this, but I like it really a lot to a point where I'm hooked?
Yeah, I think there's so much skill and beauty in the game of poker. And when you start winning money, you're playing against other people and all of a sudden you start beating them, you know, and you realize that there's so much skill. And yet there's an element of luck that kind of keeps the average players around for a long time. And but most people are always constantly improving at poker. And so for me, you know, I started making a living. That was fun. I liked the game. I liked setting my own schedule. And another realization is when I started playing online poker, you're sitting in front of a computer playing people all over the world and you're paying your bills, you know, and, you know, they probably don't want me to talk about this. And maybe this is the first time I've ever announced this, but it looks like I'm going to be signing a deal with PokerStars. And PokerStars is a global brand. I think we're only in 5 states in the US, but it's kind of cool to sit behind a computer and win a bunch of money. And so just through your own skill. And then, you know, it's very challenging because when you're playing badly, why are you playing badly? Did you have a bad day? Are you letting that affect you? Are you too fatigued? Well, that happens a lot. Are you tilted? You know, 90% of the people, when they take a bad beat, they lose a hand they're not supposed to. You know, you see me raging and being the poker bracket.
I mean, the guy can't even spell poker. I re-raised, let him know what I had. You peeled a king off, a jack off of the sucker. You don't know how to fold a hand. Some of the worst players in the world. I can't believe this is the World Series of Poker.
Yeah, go figure, huh?
Most people will tilt and come a little bit unglued for a few minutes. That's a normal, natural thing. And so you have to control that as well.
Not only do you have to control your emotions, but if I, first of all, if I was playing next to the poker Brad Phil Hellmuth, I would never do that because I would be so intimidated that you either would call me an idiot because I didn't have the right hand or didn't play it well. And that would be the case because I'm not good at poker and don't know enough about the game. But people who see this money, it's not for everybody. You have to be careful what you're doing, right?
You have to be careful. You know, I mean, there's money involved. And when I talk about poker, I always tell people, they ask me about poker. And I say, hey, listen, the most important thing is money management. We have poker players that have 50% skill level, that have very comfortable lives because they manage their money. And we have poker players that have 99 skill level that are always broke because they take their 100K win and they fire it off in the pit playing blackjack, playing baccarat. They go on a drinking binge or they do drugs or whatever, and they throw their money away. And so money management is just huge. And I used to get made fun of by the younger generation in 03, 04, 07, 10, 12, 2015, 2008. They always made fun of me because I wouldn't take enough chances with my money. And now it turns out that maybe I'm the richest poker player in the world. I think there's something to having really good money management, you know? And for me, I got lucky because I invested in a lot of early stage companies. And I had my all of my retirement money in the stock market, you know, and you put $100,000 away in 1998, and I just looked, it was $1.2 million. That's just one of my, you have a lot of, that's just one of my accounts. And so, you know, and then if you, you know, I think I've invested in 35 private companies, and you know, if you have 2% of a company and all of a sudden it's worth $5 billion, you know, that's $100 million right there, you know. So, and so I've been lucky because I've been able, my poker skills translate outside of poker. I really believe in people. So I'm not going to invest in, so people pitch me all the time, right? I advise 26 companies. Mm-hmm. So if I believe, so I have to believe in the idea, but even more so the founder, because if the idea doesn't work, can the founder pivot? You know, and so, you know, and so, you know, I'm a proud investor in Prize Picks, and that's a company that's just absolutely killing it. We had more downloads than FanDuel and DraftKings in the last 5 months, despite some legal battles, you know.
So let's say there's just one more poker tournament left, just one table. And Phil, you're allowed to invite, can't be a person who's a professional poker player and can't be a family member, but there are three seats at the table with you. Who are you inviting to play a game of poker, your last one? Who would you invite and why?
Well, I'd invite, you know, the Buddha and Jesus Christ and, you know, and like, I'd scour to find who are, you know, who are kind of the five, you know, biggest religious figures in history, you know, especially if I know it's my last game, I want to be more connected to a path forward, you know, I mean, we don't live forever. So that would probably be it. It's been, you know, there's been some pretty amazing, you know, connections for me. You know, I feel like I'm connected to a lot of the, like, coolest people on the planet.
Especially Kevin. Now that you're on Sports Gym.
Yeah. You know, played with Kevin Hart, you know, Draymond Green. I love him. I'm having a birthday weekend with, like, I call it the Billionaire Besties birthday weekend, flying to Vegas right after this interview. Elon Musk has been invited. It's been, you know, and so it's just, it's a little crazy. I'm hosting Tiger Woods charity event May 30th at the Aria. Someone who I watched a lot. Michael Jordan, someone who I watched a lot. You know, I'm always surprised when I see MJ, and he's just like, I mean, I saw, like, one time I was at Aria, and he's sitting in just getting in a limo, and I'm like, okay, he sees me, and it's Michael Jordan. He's not going to get out to say hi to me. Jumps right out of the limo, comes over to say hello. And I'm like, oh my God, mind blowing, you know, that kind of stuff. Another time I was at Aria And I see MJ and he's walking with Pops. They're walking like step, 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 Pops, you know, in the 70s or whatever. And I'm coming up fast behind him, you know, because, you know, with my headphones, and because I get mobbed in Vegas a lot. And if anybody ever catches me, I'll take the pictures, but I try to move fast. And I see MJ and I'm like, the last minute, I'm like, ah, I don't want to bother him. He gets bothered 10 times more often than I do. And so I just, you know, pull my sunglasses up. Hey, good to see you, MJ. Good to see you, Phil. Boom, I'm gone. Turn the corner, you know, near Carbone for people that know the Aria. And I open the VIP door there. And MJ's run to catch up with me. And I'm like, MJ ran to catch up. How cool am I, you know?
Is basketball your one of your favorite sports? Which one would you watch?
Yeah, but I mean, watching Michael Jordan, you know, in the 90s, I mean, like in the 80s, like, I mean, I'm one of the guys who watched all of his playoff games and a lot of it whenever I could watch. And so him running to catch up with me is, you know, pretty cool. You know, I host Tigers events for him. And so I was in L.A., giving my 16th world championship bracelet away. And we changed restaurants at the last minute. So we're at Nobu, you know, in Malibu, and the waves are crashing and it's just beautiful. And there's this great vibe and it's me and I'm with my besties and one of my friends is, they're like, Phil, this place is filled with billionaires. You know them all. And they're making fun of me. Billionaire, billionaire, billionaire. Cause I use the word billionaire a lot. Billionaire. They're all laughing at me. And then all of a sudden I get tapped on the shoulder. It's Tiger Woods. And I'm like, wow, what the, so I jump up and a thought crosses my mind. I'm going to take my 16th world champ. We're just given to Sky Dayton. And I'm going to say, Sky, give me the bracelet. And I'm going to say, to Tiger, and I probably should have asked him how his health was, but he doesn't want that. You know, I hadn't seen him since his accident. And this was a year after the accident, year and a half after the accident he had. And I'm going to pull the bracelet out and say, this is what it's like to have 16, bitch, to Tiger. And he's going to love it. He's going to give me a high five because I know that's what he wants. And I pull it out and I open it up and he's like, oh, Phil, that's your 16th. Remember, he has 15. So, and I had 15. And so we're kind of tied for, you know, and I know who the all-time tennis greats are. And I also hang out with Michael Phelps. He has 23 gold medals. And so I kind of know who the all-time greats. I was with Federer the other day. And so I'm going to just tease him. And he says, oh, Phil, that's your 16th world championship race. And it's so beautiful. I knew you could do it. Now I can't make fun of him. But I host this event 2 months later. And I had the microphone all night teasing him. And so this is the kind of stuff that's, it's just kind of a little, you know, a little mind blowing, but you become more and more used to. Yeah. Speaking of the mind blowing stuff, it's a little weird. You're right. We mentioned before we started the interview, it seems weird that I'm finally getting a lot of love. People are realizing I'm a really good person. The poker world's always defended me staunchly. Oh, Phil's an asshole at the table, but he's just a great person. He's like McEnroe. He loses it. And so the World Series of Poker last year, on the first day, 28 people came up to me. And remember, I'm walking fast with headphones. 28 people got my attention to tell me, I love you, Phil. That's mind-blowing. And I'm like, what am I called? Honey, what am I supposed to do with this? It's the first day of the world. If I get cocky, I'm not going to even. If I get cocky, I'll float away and I won't win. I need to win. I need to be focused. I need to be in the moment. And probably 20 years ago, I would have let that affect me and I probably wouldn't have played great poker for a couple of weeks. And that's the way the ego works. But because I called my wife and said, honey, at least they know that I'm a good person now. Because the image that's been projected of me to the world is Phil's an asshole. And then the poker world's always defending me. Poker world's always mad at me. Phil, whenever I tell someone I'm a pro, they ask about you. I'm sick of this. And they're laughing. And so anyway, this stuff can be a little mind blowing and you have to battle your ego. And I think a lot of celebrities are not good at that. And so I'm working on that.
And there it is. Helmuth wins the championship. So Phil gets the money.
the gold bracelet. But perhaps best of all, he has the knowledge that he beat one of the all-time greats, Johnny Chan. With me now, the new World Series of Poker champion, Phil Hellmuth. And Phil, what was going through your mind in that last hand?
Well, I knew I was a 2-to-1 favorite. I was just praying. I was just praying that he didn't, you know, we're playing $1,200,000 pot there. But even if he wins it, I still have $500,000 in chips left. So I'm not going to be out of it, but it's a real good opportunity to knock someone out of the tournament right there.
Last question for you here on Sports Jam. What meant more to you, first bracelet or the 17th?
Well, that's a good question. See, the first bracelet was the main event. That was a lifetime goal. So I already had a goal sheet written, you know, of win the main event. I wrote that goal sheet, and then a year and a half later, I won the main event. So that's pretty spectacular. 17 is incredible because it separates. There's three guys sitting on 10 bracelets. And, you know, Doyle Brunson, who was, you know, kind of the man in poker. Unfortunately, we lost him last year. He died at age 89. Johnny Chan and Phil Ivey both have 10 bracelets. Chan doesn't play as much, but Ivey's in there playing a lot of World Series tournaments. So he can, you know, catch me. A lot of people predicted he would catch and pass me when I think I had 11 and he had 9. And I just kept going. I kind of just had a vision that I was going to win 24 bracelets and just kind of said, okay. In 1993, I'm like, yep, you're going to win 24 bracelets, and just kind of felt like that's what's going to happen. You know, I think I have 12 seconds and 17 first. So if I could have converted those 12, I'd be on 29 bracelets. So the all-time total is important. And I just have to keep adding on to that. I need to keep myself healthy and just keep moving forward.
So I guess I do want to ask you one more. Why are you the best in this game? Because there is luck. You've talked about the skill that's needed, but to maintain this excellence for so many years, there has to be one particular thing that puts you ahead of the others. And I know you know what that is. Tell us what it is.
Yeah, that's my reading ability. And so I nicknamed it White Magic. So now people always say, oh, Phil is White Magic. It's not. The only reason I named it White Magic is because Black Magic sounded too negative. I remember the moment where a famous player came up to me and I said I folded this particular hand, and the mass says I could never fold. I think I had Ace Jack and someone moved in. I'm not allowed to fold. And so I started talking about how I used a couple of minutes to make this fold. And the other person said, well, what do you mean? You can't fold there. Da, da, da. And I said, no, there's a reading, but he said, what do you mean? And I thought, oh my God, to him, what I'm doing is black magic. And in that moment, I said, it's just white magic, which I call reading ability. And I mean, that's what separates me, right? And so it turns out that it might be that only 3% or 7% of the world has great reading ability. It's a very small percentage. And then if you have that, you know, the strategies, as long as you remain. So I think if you have that reading ability, then you can use it in two ways. One, you play very patiently and wait for your spots so that your reading abilities can kick in later, right? Or two, when you know someone else is weak, you can just raise them out of the hand. And so if you're doing that a lot, you're winning actually free chips. So if I play in a tournament and 15 times I make a move and I get away with all 15, you know, then I'm going to have to be really unlucky to be eliminated from that tournament, because I built such a stack that I might go out because I have queens against ace king, like a coin flip where the money has to go in. But sometimes I built up so many chips that when I have that flip, if I lose it, I'm still in there. And so I think this reading ability, this white magic, this reading ability, I think gives me, you know, 9 lives in some tournaments. And so anytime you have extra lives, you have a much better chance to win. So a lot of people are just like, I had this, I had to go all in, you know, and I went broke. And then I'm like, well, I had this, but I knew the other guy had a better hand, so I just folded. And so if you have reading ability and you understand what they're doing, then you have a very long road for success in poker.
And he is also a bridge because he mentioned Doyle Brunson. He has played many times at the table with the legendary player, and now he continues his own legacy. Our guest here on Sports Jam has been the amazing Phil Hellmuth, and you can see him on the 2024 World Series of Poker Tournament of Champions. He'll be running at the legendary Commerce Casino in L.A. starting on May 22nd. Great to have you on the show, Phil.
Way too cocky again. I'm working on it.
Thanks a lot. Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to WBGO.org/SportsJam or WBGO.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Special thanks going out to Marlon LeWinter for hooking us up with Phil Hellmuth. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.